Welcome to Positive Change with Dorina. Dorina provides her experience and opinions about various topics as interesting information for you to enjoy. She has a PhD in physiology, a degree in behavioral health counseling, a daily practice of yoga and meditation, and over 20 years' experience using alternative healing methods to help people get unstuck. She is not a medical doctor nor a therapist. If you have a medical condition or health issue, please consult your personal health care provider. Remember to be sensible and take care of yourself.
Welcome. I have with me here today Glenn Phillips. He's a talented animal whisperer. Several years ago, my dog was attacked by another dog. Despite no apparent wounds or soreness, my dog refused to put weight on her hind leg for a week. Now finally, I called Glenn, and he was able to energetically move a nerve that was pinched. And as soon as he did, my dog stood up on her hind legs and put her front paws on my lap. It was truly amazing. Now more recently, I employed Glenn to help me select a horse and a mule to rescue from slaughter. And during our conversation, it became clear that these equines would be able to facilitate healing in me. Now, I've invited Glenn to talk to us today about how animals can facilitate healing from trauma and other areas of his expertise. So, hi, Glenn, and thank you for joining us today. Can you give us a little background about how you came to be an animal communicator and healer?
Yes, I can. In about 2004, I was given a year to live. And during that time, I had reached out and volunteered with an animal, with an equine rescue. And through that, met an individual that helped me facilitate my healing. And when he asked what I wanted, I said I wanted to be able to talk to and hear horses. And he said, okay, and he opened me up to that. But one of the horses at the rescue, the alpha female, taught me how to listen. And it's all about the listening. Everybody can do it, but humans don't naturally know how to listen to anything because it's all mental. I mean, I can see pictures, I can see movies that horses show me or any animal shows me, and I can hear voices. And I started working from that just with the horses that everybody knew at the rescue, and then went on from there.
Okay, so you weren't like, it was something that someone taught you to how to tap into this talent that you already had, kind of.
The horses taught me, yes. I mean, I grew up always with a dog in the house. And even when I was in grade school, I could get up and I'd walk out of my bedroom and the dog would be sitting there and I'd go, oh, you're thirsty. And I'd walk back to where the bowl was and the bowl would be empty. And my mom would look at me and go, how'd you know that? And go, I don't know. But it was at that age, I could already listen, but I was thinking that I was making things up.
Yeah, we don't recognize it, or we don't realize we can hear. Because I was asking myself that actually yesterday, was like, okay, because I was sending the horses that were coming to my place these pictures, and I realized, you know, I can't get information back from them. You know, I need somebody like Glenn. And I said, wait, have you ever really listened? Maybe you do get information back. So it might be...
And you had to because of how the horses are acting today, the horse and the mule. You were getting messages, so you were prepared for them getting them.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. It's very subtle. We have to be quiet to be able to do this, kind of.
Oh, yes.
Now, I've always thought of animals around us as being companions, and I think you opened me to the idea that they have this capacity to heal. Can you speak a little bit to that?
All animals have a job.
Really?
Some are just as companions. Their only job is to be there and be support. Others, especially horses, have a job because of the way they're designed. If you go for a 2-hour horseback ride, just a regular slow trail ride,
mm-hmm.
you come back so relaxed, it's hard to stand up because the horse draws out all the lower emotions and energies. And the frog at the bottom of the hoof pushes that into the ground so the horse doesn't hold on to them, but they know that's their job.
Wow. So they have an awareness that this is what they're doing?
Yeah. If a horse is just in a, you know, in a field or kept in a stall, doesn't have a job, it will get not only bored, but it'll get depressed and, you know, start acting up because they need, you know, they were sent here to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sooner or later, somebody has to realize that. And, you know, even if it is just, you know, the horses are very good with PTSD, taking out the information, the, you know, all of the stress and anger and everything with PTSD. That's why they're used very successfully with veterans.
Okay.
And you don't always have to ride because a lot of the time there is spent brushing the horse, talking to the horse, feeding the horse, and just rubbing your hands and holding your hands on the horse.
That was my next question. Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't have to necessarily be riding.
No, it doesn't.
It's the contact.
You know, the contact and the interaction. And even in that, in PTSD, you're not given a horse.
Hmm?
The horse does the picking.
Oh.
Every animal knows who they're supposed to be with for whatever their job is. So there'll be two or three or, you know, up to six horses in the arena. And a person will stand in the middle of the arena and the horse that's supposed to be with them will come up. It's the one who knows they can reach that individual.
Okay.
And it's really interesting to watch.
Now, is that the way, I'm not real familiar with like the equine therapy. Is that kind of how sessions are?
Yes.
Okay.
But once the horse picks you, that's your horse while you're going through therapy. So it's an ongoing thing. But a lot of it is teaching the person to listen to their feelings. Because their feelings are the communication with the animal. Animals especially, I mean, all animals read your thoughts. And the idea of communication is truly, when people ask me to talk to their animals, I don't listen to the questions. Because the animal hears their thought, which all humans have to have the thought before they can say the words.
Right, right.
They start answering while the human is asking the question.
Wow.
So I don't pay any attention to the question itself.
Because the energy comes first, then the thought, then the words, then, yeah. And the animals already responded to the energy that came up.
That's right. So it's the practice of listening without listening is what I call it. You're listening to the animal without listening to the human who's in need of the answers.
Uh-huh. And then how does the information come from the animal to you?
All mental. And it can be, I can hear the words sometimes. Sometimes I just know the answer, and it wouldn't be anything that I would think of because my mind is blank.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm talking. or they show me movies or pictures. And I did a racehorse once that wouldn't win. And the trainer had me out and talking to him, and you know, and I explained what the reason was, because he didn't like the jockey that had been riding him.
Mm-hmm.
Refused to run for him because the guy didn't know what he was doing, according to the horse. And in the next race, the owner pulled the jockey and put somebody else up there. And I mean, the horse came in third, but ran the best race of its life.
Ah, nice.
And danced all the way back to the stall going, I did it. I did it. I did it.
The victory dance.
Yes. And then right after that, she took me to her horses and said, what can you tell me about the first one? And I put my hand on the horse and I said, why do I see the horses? And I said, it was a racehorse. And she goes, yeah, it was. And I said, ran right through the fence? And she just looked at me and said, how'd you know that? And I said, showing me a movie of coming out of the gate, putting its head down, and just turning left because the jockey was uncomfortable. And just went right through the gate and said, really got hurt. And she got, and then she turned the horse around and said, yeah, here's the cut that goes from the chest mm-hmm. all the way, halfway back. And I said, totally healthy now and doesn't hurt. And she goes, yeah. She said, but you knew what happened is, you know, amazing. I said, it's just the movie that I was being shown.
Mm-hmm.
See, their subconscious is exactly the same as ours.
Really?
It's a forever mm-hmm. memory. Your subconscious is a memory of every life you've had. You just have to get to that point. So when I'm talking to people, a lot of times when I'm doing healing sessions with people, I will see things that happened and I can bring them up to them and say, what about this? Because you're showing me this. And people do the same thing. They unconsciously send messages all the time.
Now, if something like that picture comes up, if an unconscious message is coming up, is it then unresolved? Does it have to have some sort of action? I mean, if we've got memories of everything.
usually it has something that needs to be resolved. With animals, it's only if they're asked a question, because they don't dwell on past.
Okay. So they have the recording, but it's not necessarily.
Now.
So they don't feel.
They'll just show me the response to whatever the question was. And there is no, the same as talking to a horse, there is absolutely no accusations. There's no animosity ever, but they can be blunt.
Uh-huh.
They don't sugarcoat anything. So if you're doing something wrong and they say, is everything good? They'll go, no, you're doing this wrong and this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. But it's not saying that you need to change that. It's just letting you know in the horse's world, that's wrong.
So where does that judgment come from?
The judgment is in the human mind. It's not a judgment. It's specific things that if the human is doing something wrong. And the human takes some of the comments as judgment. And it's not. It's just, this is the way it is.
So maybe, because I'm hearing the word wrong, so maybe it's more like ineffective or something. Not judgment, right and wrong.
Or,
but
you know, it's you're listening to people that you shouldn't listen to. And that is what happens a lot of the time in the horse world. People use what they've, if they're not really into animal communication, they listen to everybody else who says, well, I had a horse who did that once and this helped. And you go, not horses are even more individual than humans. They have their own individuality, their own thoughts, their own responses.
So are they
can be bred to do specific things, but it's not always what they enjoy.
Okay. Are they, because I heard you just say they don't dwell on the past. So could we say that they're really living in the present all the time, never in the future or the past? Or?
Yep, always right now.
Okay, so they're basically
they
enlightened
beings.
They can talk
about the future. Yes, they can talk about the future and the past. But there's no, unless it's an injury that is causing problems now, they can go back and say, yeah, this is the cause of what's going on. And it happened a year ago. But you can move past all that once you treat that specific thing. But everything else is now in future. They know what they can do. They know how to do it. They're just being allowed to do it.
Fascinating. So you talked about, like with PTSD, the ability of the horse to basically transmute or take energy and transmute it or change it or channel it away.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other ways that they facilitate healing? Or do other animals do it differently? Or
all animals pull into themselves first. And you'll see, if you look it up, quite a few people that have had cancer, if they have a dog or a cat, that animal dies from cancer, and then suddenly there's no cancer in the human.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It's that type of thing. There, when an animal always picks you, and a dog and a cat and everything.
Yeah.
They will pick you. It's not you go and look and go, I want that one. Because even if that's the one you pick out, there's something about that animal that draws you to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the animal that's supposed to be with you, because they come back with a contract. And that contract is for a specific human being.
It's interesting.
And for
a
specific purpose.
That's pretty incredible. I have this bunny, and I went to work for the bunny rescue, right? Like they have 120 rabbits in one little building or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her and I said, oh, that's the one I want. But she was going out for adoption fair, and she was really cute. Somebody would have gotten her. So that day she was supposed to go out for the adoption fair, and they took her out, put her in an outside pen for a little while. And she must have ran into the fence because her nose started bleeding. And also they wouldn't let her go out. She'd been injured. And I always thought, oh, she did that because they wouldn't let me adopt quite yet.
Because she's supposed to be with you.
Exactly.
Yep. And animals make their own universe, if you want to call it that, around them. And making a very long story short, I work with a professional golfer who had lost his dog 2 months before. When I met him, I had no idea who he was, other than, he had had a dog, and he brought the dog's collar and a picture. So I was telling him about, what the dog was answering to his questions, and answering every question, including, he said, why does the dog keep on showing me a jet ski? I said, that doesn't really fit. And he goes, well, he went everywhere with me, and he looked forward to the summers when time off, we would spend days on a jet ski at the lake. And I went, okay, then that makes sense. And the dog was so important to him that he said he had to come back. He quit everything. He quit golf. He quit a $5 million project that he just walked away from, all his money. and said he really didn't have a reason to continue doing any of that. And, you know, I said, the dog said, if you need him that bad, he can come back. And he goes, when? And I said, I see the number 6. And this was on a Sunday. And he said, what, 6 years, 6 months? I said, no, I'm seeing 6 days by the size of the 6. And he goes, where? And I said, I thought about it and I listened. And I said, he's saying, you'll understand when you see the sun. Sun is spelled S-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I need more. And I said, well, the dog just shut up. So, no, you're not going to get any more. And the next morning he called me and says, I know what he's talking about. The only home he ever really knew was Jefferson City, Missouri, the S-O-N. And I said, is there an animal rescue there? And he said, yeah. I said, okay. And he says, what time? And he said, "What? When and what time? I said, well, 6 would be Saturday. And he's saying 10 o'clock. And so he goes, okay. And the next Saturday, I mean, he drove back from Scottsdale to Jefferson City.
Wow.
And he had driven from there up just to see me and then drove back. And when he got there, he was with his father, and he looked at the sign that said Saturday hours, noon to 5. He's going, what is this 10 o'clock stuff? And 5 after 10, the door opens, and the girl says, you can come in. And he got out of his car, and he looked and says, well, what about this? And she goes, everybody's here. He said, nobody knows. There wasn't an email. There wasn't anything, but everybody's here. And we've never opened before noon on a Saturday. He goes, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So he went in and found the dog and said, I want to take this dog for a walk. And she goes, that dog? He goes, yeah, give me a leash. So he put the dog out and they went outside with his father and they started playing the same games the other dog used to play. And the dog knew the games immediately. It wasn't, they would just say a word and the dog would respond the way the other one did. And I had told him that, when the dog comes back, it's going to be 7 months old. It's not, even though it had only been 2 months from when his dog died, but that's a different part of the equation. And he brought him in and said, I want this dog. And the woman said, no, you don't want that dog. And he goes, no, I want this dog. And she goes, you don't understand. When I left last night at 5:15, the dog was sitting on the steps outside waiting to come in. I put him in a kennel, gave him food, water, and I went home. We don't know anything about the dog. And he goes, I know everything. He said, I want the dog. So he walked out, he paid the fee and walked out with the dog, knowing that the dog made its own universe by being there at a time when no one else would be there to get him. So there wasn't a chance of somebody else.
No competition.
Him. Nope.
That's like magical.
And I mean, for 5 years, they have been inseparable. He went back to golf. He went back to, he's working on a number of projects now. So it all comes down to the need for animals. They give us so much more.
Yeah. What is that about? Because it seems kind of like attachment. I mean, is it healthy to need an animal so much?
Healthy.
It's always healthy.
I mean, not to need an animal so much, but there are times when the need is that great, it's for a cause that is beyond you. And his cause, and I didn't mention, because he had said, if you tell me what the project was about, I'll believe everything you said, even though everything he was saying yes to everything I said.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at him. I said, well, it has to do with kids. And he goes, that's enough. Because the project is building golf courses and facilities and everything, but having an area that during the summers, disadvantaged kids and kids from foster homes and that will go free to spend a week learning how to golf, learning about animals, learning about different things. And learning about cooking and everything. And it would be a separate facility just for the kids and a separate 9-hole golf course just for them.
Okay, so this is divine intervention. This is like a universal oneness coming together to create something, and all the pieces need to be there. So the animal is necessary to keep the human going.
Yep, yeah. And that's the way the universe looks at it. And it doesn't matter whether you say universe, God, they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is only one, so.
Wow. So there's a lot more to the relationships that animals have with humans that we don't necessarily notice.
You don't notice, and nobody cares to go that far. And is it important? No, but in time with, you know, any kind of animal companion, they do reach a point where they're getting older, and the human starts looking at, what am I going to do without you?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a realization that they have spent a lot of their energy being supported by the animal.
I was always thinking the humans were supporting the animals.
Yes. I mean, we feed and water them, and that's about it. Other than that, the emotional support is them to us.
Oh, really? Is it always that way?
That's why it's always good. Oh, yes. That's why, you know, they'll say some, you know, you have dogs that are considered lap dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But you have huge Great Danes and Labs and everything that won't get off your lap.
True, you know, lap dogs.
They don't lay on the floor because they need you to feel their support. And it's almost always because there are things going on in your life that are so overwhelming that the animal takes a lot of that energy on themselves. And the closer they can be to you, the better their work.
So with dog, like the dog who died of cancer, you know, who's taken on that stuff. Mm-hmm. So are horses, it sounds like horses are able to transmute it or get rid of it. Are dogs and cats, are they more limited in that ability, or can they be taught to transfer that better?
That's their job.
Okay.
They knew coming in exactly what was going to happen to them. You know, they know to the minute when they're going to die, unless it's a total accident that they don't see coming.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So it's not a, you know, anything that needs to be changed in dogs and cats.
Right.
In smaller animals. Horses do the same thing at times. So pull in stuff. And a lot of them, it's pulling in stuff from their, you know, if you want to call it a herd, you know, even if there are only two animals.
Mm-hmm.
If one is considered more important, and it's not always the alpha in a group, that animal, they'll pull everything out of that animal to keep that animal healthy, including the alpha will pull stuff into her just to keep the other one healthy.
Okay.
But it's almost always about humans more than anything else. But they can tell the future in a lot of things, and they know what's coming up. So that's how they can manipulate their universe and the humans around them.
So they have a sense of what the future is, and then they can change it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yep. By being present, by being, you know, if an animal isn't where they're supposed to be, they make changes to make sure they get there. You know, especially in a rescue. You know, mm-hmm. somebody will pick up a dog or a cat or a horse and take them home and say, okay. And a month later, saying, this really isn't working out. He's not obedient. He turns on me, does everything wrong. I need to bring him back. And you go, okay, you bring him back because the animal didn't change anything but reacted because he's with the wrong person. So they make sure they get back to maybe reaching their contract.
Okay.
The now, same as yeah. the rabbit running into the fence and getting hurt to find the contract. You.
Yeah. Now, a lot of the horses at the feedlot or down in Texas or whatever, I mean, it's some of them get adopted and saved and others don't. And I had a sense that some of the ones that don't are ready for slaughter. Now, it's not politically correct to say that, but what's your sense about that?
They accept that because a lot of it is the meaning that they can't reach their contract or
okay.
they've already been with their contract and taken care of the business that they came back for. And they're not given multiple contracts usually. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they can get a new contract when the old one is done. But other than that, they know that they can come back the next day.
Okay.
The day they die, the next day, they can come back if they really want to.
So they just have a lot more awareness than we have of what's going
totally.
On.
Yep.
What else are animals aware of that we aren't aware of?
I mean, you know the thing that animals know, changes in weather. They know... things that are happening before they happen, whether it's earthbound things, earthquakes, and you know, certain types of storms, they'll get really fidgety because
okay.
then it's dangerous. Other than that, you know, rain and snow doesn't bother them. But they'll, you know, and it's not, nothing has to hit yet, but they can just sense that the energy changed because they're so aware of energy that slight changes will set in motion the fight or flight or, you know, whatever needs to be done.
So in the in case here, like we had those fires that were, I mean, you could smell them, but let's say there were fires fairly close that are ravaging places, would they be able to pick up on that energy without having any physical evidence of fire just because people were panicking?
Oh, yeah. Because people were panicking, they feel everybody's emotions. And fear and aggression are energies that set off so many things in the human body and not just the one who's feeling it. Anybody around them or attached to them will feel it.
Okay, yeah. So in terms of, I'm thinking globally, right? We've got a lot of fear. We've got a lot of aggression. And I think sometimes even I can pick up on stuff before I read it in the news. It's like, wow, what am I feeling? the latest, whatever. So do they have that same sensitivity, and how do they cope with it then?
Well, a lot of it is because they're grounded with the frog
okay.
in the bottom of the hoof. They're grounded, so sometimes they can let go of it. Sometimes you'll see them, you know, if they're excited and running, they'll be jumping and kicking and different things with horses.
Mm-hmm.
If they're anxious, they'll just run.
Okay.
And they'll start running and keep running and keep running, and it's getting rid of that anxiety or fear. But you'll also see the other parts of them, that they start sweating and their nostrils flare, and they give off the regular signs the same as humans do. About emotional things or things that could hurt them that they sense. And it doesn't have to be, they don't have to, you know, they'll smell smoke, that a mile away you can't smell it, but they
right.
still can.
Yeah.
Because their senses are that much stronger than ours. And, you know, even if their emotions and the knowledge that they carry, they can change a human's mindset. I had a client that I talked to, one of her horses, and the girl was 12 or 13 at the time. And the horse had said, "I'm not the right horse for you." And you know, the girl was crying, saying, "No, that's my horse." And he goes, "No, I'm your mother's horse." And the mother looked and said, "I don't ride." I said, "It doesn't matter." He said, "Okay." So they got her a new horse. And I said, "Yeah, this is the one that is a champion horse." And she goes, "Well, she's pretty good." And I said, "No." I said, "Change your attitude." I said, "You don't want to win. You're afraid to win."
Ah.
"No, I'm not." And I said, "The horse is saying you're afraid to win because you're afraid to put your heart into the animal." And she hugged the horse and said, "Yeah." 2 years later, her and that horse took third in the Junior Olympics in the
wow.
United States.
Champion.
And that was going from, yes. And you go, and the mother came up, you know, saw me about a year later, and she said the change was so remarkable when she understood her horse. And that the horse understood her. That everything changed in her life. And I'm going, yeah, that's the way animals work.
Yeah, it's what you're describing sounds like it's a very one-way street. Because one of my questions was, you know, can humans help animals heal from trauma or whatever? But it sounds like we're getting all the benefit.
For the most part, and I do healings on horses, but it's, you know, the thing that the human has to ask for the most part. There are lots of times where something will happen, whether it's a dog, a cat acting up, or a horse going lame. It's for me to show up and realize that the human is going through something that needs my help and has absolutely nothing to do with the animal.
Oh.
So then it's just touching the part of the animal and letting that energy run off. And the animal's fine. I've done it with lame horses where, you know, I pulled it out and said, you know, even right before an event, because the girl was having trouble. And it was all about the girl, not about the horse. So I pulled the strain out of the tendon, and she rode a great event about half an hour later. But then I had to work with her.
Okay.
Because she was the one that the animal, you know, the animal brought her to me, not, you know, it wasn't about the animal being injured, because that was something the animal did to itself, just to get my attention.
Get you in there. Very good.
Yeah.
That it's amazing how intricate and all this stuff can be if we're not paying attention.
Oh, yes. And everybody in their life, who pays attention? Because you're focused on your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not, yeah. You know, not the animals, unless they present something that you have to focus on them.
And even then, with our lack of training and listening, we don't get it. It's like, oh, it's an animal problem. Instead of like, oh, what are you trying to tell me?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. So, yeah,
and that is the thing, is learning to listen.
Now, you're in the process of writing a book. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
The book is How to Say Goodbye to Your Animal Companion. And it really is, at certain times of the year especially, I start to get a lot of calls about, you know, my animal's acting like this, and, you know, what am I supposed to do? And animals will always give us a sign that it's time. And sometimes they just, you know, say died suddenly, but there were signs. They were trying to get in touch with the human and say, my time is coming. And there are times when the animal can't control the death process. And they'll say, I need help. And it's the animal's choice, because they're hurting. And they want to be helped across. And a lot of humans don't get that.
Yeah, I might be one of those people.
They ignore the signs. Yeah, they ignore all the signs saying, well, you know, you really have to tell me. Well, the animal's been telling you. And, you know, sometimes the human is lucky. I did a reading at a horse show once, that they have a bidding, and I don't even know what it's called. A silent bidding auction the night before, you know, at a dinner. And then I always put in an animal reading or, you know, a human healing session. And a woman that won, you know, I went to see her dog the next morning. And, you know, she said the dog is, gave me how old the dog was. And what the dog had been doing. I said, I don't need to know any of that. And she goes, why not? And I said, the dog's been telling you he's been sick. He's run down. He has no energy. And she goes, yeah. And she goes, and I said, he's been throwing up. And she goes, yeah. I said, okay, forget all that. So the dog is telling you that it's time. But the dog is saying that is not going to die for 6 months, but wants you to know that that's coming. And said, once you know, the dog can go back to being happy and acting and having energy, because you already know it doesn't have to do the outward appearance.
Okay.
And she goes, that would be awesome. She said, you know, I can get ready for that. And I said, and understand, no one's ever ready, no matter how much time you have. And she goes, okay, I realize that. A year later at a horse show, I was talking to a woman with her horse there, and somebody came riding by and stopped and said hi to the woman I was talking to. And, you know, I turned around and looked, and I didn't recognize her. And she said, whatever he tells you, understand it, gospel. And I turned around and I said, I don't recognize you. I'm sorry. And she said, I'm the woman who you talked to the dog, and the dog was dying. And I said, oh, yeah, last year. And she goes, yeah. She said, 6 months to the day, I woke up and found my dog dead. And I went, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the dogs are accurate. Animals are accurate on when they're dying. And she said, the day after you talked to him, said, looked like a puppy again, running everywhere, barking and, you know, having a good time up until the day it died. And going,
wow.
You already knew, so everything was fine. And with animals, that's the way it is. It's about the human. It's not about the animal.
So when you said we need to help them, I was thinking like euthanasia or something. What were you meaning exactly?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it is. If they ask for help in crossing, then it is euthanasia. That's what they're asking for.
Okay.
But sometimes it's just letting you know that they're dying. And that's fine. But if you ask, you know, if talking to me, I will tell people, you're asking me a question. I can tell you what the animal's answer is. That you have to respect the animal. I said, if somebody who, you know, I had talked to that refused, you know, I said, the dog is really sick, what needs to be taken to the vet and put to sleep. Well, I can't do that. The animal's asking for it. Well, I can't do that. I love my animal too much. And you go, if you love your animal, you do this. No, I can't do that. And walk away. And you go, you know, all I can do is send energy to the animal and say, I'm sorry, that's right. And they say, well, okay, that's all we can ask. Can't force humans to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can only ask.
So with your book on helping humans with their animals, companion animals transition, is there any other advice, I guess?
Most of it is always listen. Take the time away from worldly things. And join the universe that's there for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a separate, you know, they live in our universe, but within their own. Join that universe where everything is at peace, everything is where it's supposed to be. And when you can do that and shut off your mind, that's the biggest part in today's society. Nobody wants to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be completely, your mind has to be completely blank to do it. And you just sit there and listen. You don't have to ask questions. They'll tell you. And so many of the, you know, if you look at animals, the reactions on animals, especially as they get older. And they're so sensitive to things. They see the spirits the same as I do, of other animals, of people wandering around. So, you know, a dog or a cat will sit in a certain room and stare right above a door.
Mm-hmm.
That's another animal, either a friend of theirs or another animal that died in the house. And they communicate. It's not a fear thing. It's just, that's their peaceful way of saying, you know, what's going on? Here's what's happening here. And they just, it's just a back and forth. But they always take the time to stay within the universe that they create. We need to do that now, is go to their universe and communicate.
Uh-huh. Very nice.
And only ours is listening. We can talk, we can ask them any questions, and they'll answer. but we need to be with them first.
Now, what happens when the human dies before their companion animal?
Usually the companion, if it doesn't have another contract, will slowly pass away.
Okay.
Some of them are not there just for that human. They're there for another purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue. But they have to have a reason to continue.
Okay. Makes sense.
When you ask that question, it brings up, and I have no idea who the person was that died but left their estate to their cat and left enough money that the cat would be well-treated the rest of its life and live in the house by itself, and that's wrong. Because they're there for people.
Uh-huh.
If you don't bring people into their lives, they have no job.
Well, but the cat probably had enough money, could hire some people to come in and...
let me work with you a while, okay?
Yeah, I'm a wealthy cat now, so I can put ads out and get the right contract ones.
Yeah, probably have a lot of them wanting to adopt the cat.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much. This has been really illuminating for me, and I'm really happy to be able to put this out on the podcast world for other people to listen to. Now, what's your website if people want to get a hold of you, or the best way to get a hold of you?
My website is whispertohealing.com, and that's whispertohealing.com.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for having me.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, take a moment to give it a 5-star review in iTunes. If you're feeling stuck and would like to have a session with me, visit my website at changeanythingnow.com to find out more. Sessions that air on the podcast I do for free. How does it get better than that? Positive Change with Dorina. Program credits. Music is Cheery Monday by Kevin McLeod. Incompetech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. The voice intro was by Dylan McCloskey. You can find him on Fiverr.com. The podcast, copyright 2017, Dorina Road, all rights reserved.